Welcome to another episode of the After the Whistle podcast. I'm Smiley and I'm joined by Vangelda and Corey. Unfortunately, it's not the full house we're looking for this episode. But crack there, cracky, go for party outside Accra because the economy they lash out the way they lash the rest of us. So crack, go for party. Okay, your man, they work 24 hours a day now. So unfortunately, we don't have a full house. But yeah, Corey, Vangelda, make us start with Corey. Also,
it's good, bro. I'm good, man.
We are alive. So you're repping the Arsenal jersey now because you're back to winning ways.
Low key, I haven't done laundry. So I had to pick that jersey at the back of a cupboard that doesn't see the light of day.
Vangelda.
I'm good, man. Good. Good week. Quiet weekend. Happy to be here.
Something that looked different with Vangelda. You shave your beard or something.
Not talk about the beard. And then I forgot to.
We had something
that went
on there. I thought it was the light.
Nah, Charlie.
Something they look different to you.
I for shame because then I for do some face fit tests for work, like these kind of like safety masks. Therefore measure your face something. So they say if I be clean shaven, I'm never clean shaven. And then I had to shave. So last week, as we know, recorded my head because I shaved last week. Right now, I make cool small with the face. Well, nah. Yeah, but I have to shave.
Anyway, it's been a long weekend of football action, so let's just jump right into it. And we are going to start with Man City, who have just gone on a 5-game losing streak. Man City and Pep Guardiola, and for the record, Pep Guardiola, this is the first time in his career that he's gone on a 5-game losing streak. And even before that, I think it was also the first time he's gone on a 4-game losing streak. He's been on a 4-game losing streak before at Bayern, but with that one, he lost one of those games on penalties or something. So it not really counts like that. But this is the first time in his career that he's gone on a 5-game losing streak. This is extremely unusual for Pep and for the Abu Dhabi Man City. Even though the normal Man City that we know, this should be normal
I'm
for
glad,
them.
But I'm glad you made that distinction.
For the Abu Dhabi financial doping Man City, this is very, very unheard of. And let me just start with Corey. What do you make of this losing streak? Do you think it is the sign of an empire crumbling? Is this like the end of the Pep dynasty at Man City, or is just one of those speed drums that is just due to injuries and all sorts of things, something that we'll get over eventually?
First of all, let's all stay grounded. This thing, no, it not mean anything. It means absolutely, listen, this man speaks to spirits. Look, it means nothing. It just means say, they're going through a period. Every team has a team. So we're all waiting for the Liverpool zone. Shout out to the Liverpool fans. They're going through a really tough period. And we are underestimating, or it looks as if people are underestimating the value of Rodri's absence to this team. He's literally the best midfielder in that position in the world. That was like he chopped the Ballon d'Or, and obviously hype. Other people voted for him and stuff. He chopped him. He is highly integral. I can't remember the win percentage with him without him. Well, clearly this plus five really took into that percentage. But they win like 90% of matches he plays. I remember last season he was on some ridiculous unbeaten run. Where I can't remember how many games it was that he was just on an unbeaten run. If he played, he didn't lose. And this, they have no spine. With Rodri missing, there's essentially no spine in that City team, and they run through them. Like Rico Lewis, is not it. He's not even a bit part player of what Rodri is. Like he is never in a comparison. He's a right back. or in left back, if you will. So him in the middle of the field, they've lost Kovacic as well to injury, I believe. So he's not featuring. KDB is back with one leg. Foden is exhausted. He hasn't picked up form at all. By this time last season, he was starting to turn the wheel, but he's still firing. He's still stuttering. Let's put it that way. So their team essentially, Haaland hasn't scored in how many games? Stay humble, my friend. Stay humble. Yeah. Sometimes if you know how you will talk, the weight of negativity that they push for that man in back, eh? But either way, I think they're just going through a period. They'll catch some Ipswich or something. Even though some people know if he scores Ipswich, if he catches Ipswich, then give them some four. Essentially gather their confidence, and I think they'll be back. In all honesty, and the City, man, in general, they're going to throw money at the problem. They've already prepared a check, gives Zubimendi. Pep could call him and say, Charlie, this I did not be Klopp matter, I did not be Liverpool matter. Come make me see what we will do. You go come. So I think come January, they'll be back. They'll go on some stupid unbeaten run again. And yeah, let's just stay grounded.
But like when you talk about them missing Rodri and all of that, like doesn't that say something about Pep Guardiola, considering the resources available to him as a Man City manager? The fact that they are this dependent on one player to the extent that they can collapse this badly. 5 games in a row, even Man United at the peak of their banter period, even though they are still in their banter period anyway, but Man United at the peak of their banter period have not gone on a 5-game losing streak before. I'm not even sure if they've gone on a 4-game losing streak. So, like, to collapse this badly without Rodri, doesn't that say something about Pep? Maybe talk about him being a checkbook manager. Is there some truth to it?
I don't think so. And that's, I don't think there's a truth to this whole checkbook manager, because to be fair, which manager doesn't use their checkbook? Just because my checkbook is bigger than your checkbook doesn't mean that we are both no checkbook managers. But it does beg the question that have they probably recruited poorly in the midfield? Just think about it. They had Fernandinho, and then he was being deputized by Rodri. As they were facing Fernandinho out, they brought Rodri in. Rodri was doing the work. And then Fernandinho became a centre-back, and then they phased him out of the team. But I reckon what they've thought is, this guy's young, he's fit, he rarely gets injured. So we are just going to keep him till, you know, and then we'll attack it later. Maybe I do think this summer, if I'm not mistaken, they tried to sign someone in the middle of the park. I can't remember who it was. But they tried to sign someone in the middle of the park. And I think maybe that's why they also actually wanted to sign Declan Rice.
Wasn't Calvin Phillips supposed to be the deputy for Rodri?
Oh, no. Then sign him. Pep watch him 15 minutes for training. Or he come and say, that guy doesn't know how to play football. He make you no worry about it. He go Ipswich, if you know the seat up for there. Then Man City.
He's not getting selection at Ipswich, am I lying?
If you shine, yeah, everybody will see say you shine.
But I mean, in the end, he was on an upward trajectory before Man City signed him. So that failure could be on Man City for failing to maximize what they signed.
I think so. I agree.
I don't
think so.
Unless
he was looking good.
At Leeds, you mean?
Like, if he wasn't on an upward trajectory, they wouldn't have signed
Fine.
him.
Fine. But let's okay, so since then, what has happened? He left Man City to go and play half a season at West Ham. And he couldn't
the starter
take over.
Had already started though.
Yeah, but then the thing say some players they only the fit play for one particular type of manager in one particular type of system. If you jump from that system, no, that'd be all. He not do anything.
He looked good for Leeds and he looked good for England.
Did he really look good for England?
He did. Like,
England, the matches he played, he was good. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So basically, he played for two Bang Bami teams. Wait. He played for two Bang Bami teams. One good manager, one Bang Bami manager. And somehow, in confidence from Leeds, then they show up for England, make it a feast.
I think if you think about it, if Pep designed you, unless Pep didn't have a say in it, which I sincerely doubt.
If Pep designed you,
they see they big up all the other players, you know, wait, come, you say you, Charlie, why the ball? Why they tire you? So you know, like he's frustrated at you, or you know, if he give you the push and the love and things, bro. If he just make you feel say like, or are you really not that good?
But then again,
who cares about Calvin Phillips' mental health? You go back to Rotten.
But on a more serious note, though, but maybe we haven't fully investigated properly exactly what Pep requires of that number six role. We see Rodri, they do effortlessly. And everybody where you get to new from Matheus Nunes to Calvin Phillips, everybody below, like, if you below, like, you know, if you play the ball, he didn't expect
even Nunes. That's a good point. Nunes,
that's 50 million, and then another 50
Nunes
million
was also on an upward trajectory in Wolves.
I mean, my Wolves play a very counter-attacking, fast-flowing. If I get a ball, I have two touches and I know who to give it to. And in Pep Guardiola's game, the six doesn't just defend. He dictates pace of the game. He dictates how they hold on to possession, when they recycle it, where they recycle it to. So really, if your brain no big, you don't have to do that job. And that is...
But
that
they might still just identified be. Him. And if they are failing to maximize his talents, then it's an indictment on them too, because you can't just design all these players.
I'm not disagreeing with you on that score. I'm just saying that, you know, sometimes there's an idea of a player, right? You watch a player, you watch the matrix, you watch the numbers and everything, and the idea is this guy is actually kind of good. Or if we tweak this and that, we can get him to do what we need him. And then you actually have the thing, and yeah, it's not looking good, bruv. It's not looking good. So for me, I just think that I don't think they would throw their checkbook at it, but I think they might look to sign someone in the end to replace, because they can't promote. It doesn't seem like they have anyone in their academy. And again, make academic football people know can't shoot me. I don't know anything about academy football. Maybe they do. Maybe me, I don't know the guy. Right, but
it would have been Lavia,
but they sold Lavia 2 summers ago.
And actually, you raise a good point about academy, because this is also maybe another area where you could point to Pep and his failures. Because Man City, for all intents and purposes, they arguably have the best
academy at the moment,
because scattered all over the league are players from the academy who are dominating at like top teams. Like, you have Morgan Rogers dominating at Aston Villa, you have Lavia at Chelsea, you have Liam Delap at Ipswich, Cole Palmer at Chelsea. Like, they have so many academy players, but they've not really given an opportunity to any of them.
Even to an extent, Jadon Sancho.
Yeah. So, to what you're saying, they probably have options in the academy who they've not given a chance to, and they would rather just go out and sign. So that's also another failure you could point to.
But the thing about Pep Guardiola and big managers, and me, I made my peace with it under Jose. So personally, I have no problems with that at all. If they bring you in, they expect you to have the big personality or to look like somebody who has the potential to have the big personality. It's not enough for them that you're talented. You must come in and play as if you are playing with your boys in under-17 in the men's game. It will be now then they can't coach you how you forget personality. Because we don't coach
them. Bob head, eh?
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate. Yoda, again, most of these players never even got the chance. I don't think people like Morgan Rogers and Cole ever even got the chance. But they are showing some serious confidence where they are.
But bro, we do not know that for a fact. What we know is that they got sold at some point by Manchester City. What if Pep Guardiola did take a look at them? Chelsea, if I come to Chelsea, for instance, academy players, they come first team, can't train plus them all the time. And I'm pretty sure it's like that with other big teams as well. Mm-hmm. Maybe the academy coaches, because in Man City, everybody's coaching is based on the playbook that Pep Guardiola has developed. So from under 15 straight to the first team, everybody is coached the same way. And that the coaches then they use everything has to be pre-approved. As this guy can coach Pep's way. If not, no. So maybe Pep has looked at him. Because definitely every academy they feed into the first team and say, look, these are the good. It sounds like I'm making excuses for them, but as a big club.
I won't play devil's advocate to what you're saying, right? You're saying that maybe he watched the guys he did the academy inside and none of them are up to standard.
Mm.
Right?
Yeah.
I don't think in an academy of 40 players, you know, if you tell me, say, you know, if he gets just one set. Okay. Let's put Oscar Bob down. Because he started
Enrico, with some small and small. Enrico Lewis as well.
Enrico.
Because Rico even started playing more before Oscar, actually.
So let's say he gives two right now.
Mm.
Are we then being too hard?
No. I think it's a fair point to make that a club of the standing of Manchester City, who across all age levels for the past maybe 5 years have been champions or been the best team in England across several age levels, it is a fair point to make that why are you not looking at your academy? However, don't forget that Pep, he be their managers where he go sit academy and go watch them at games. He is fed information by the coaches. Like, these are the ones to look out for. Maybe these three or these four or these five. And those are the ones you concentrate on. It's the same thing like where Arteta might be told, look at Ethan, look at...
He didn't handpick Ethan, but as he come, he go academy where he say, I hear you have a player for me. We didn't give him the Ethan. No. But, okay.
But that's the point I'm making is, yes, if we want to look at Manchester City signing players and all of those things, then we have to understand that they are operating at such a high efficiency level. They don't have time to develop your personality.
I was going
to
say that being champions...
And there's a certain level, sorry, Corey, but there's a certain level of mindset, there's a certain level of character you need to possess to play for such a team. And to play under a manager like Pep Guardiola, where you have a talent, for instance, like Cole Palmer, and he will say, wait, you have the character, you have the personality, you have the skill, but I say you wait. Uh-huh. And then it's up to you to decide whether you wait like Phil Foden did, or you say, no, I'm off, like Cole Palmer did.
Phil Foden actually didn't wait. He was just picked and he started being used. But I'm glad Cole Palmer didn't wait. Because that boy had everything. And then they just sit in top.
Yeah. But then again, if you think about it, he had players like Mahrez ahead of him. Because he started out as a right winger.
And that's what I'm saying.
The people ahead of him were Mahrez, Gundogan, and Kevin De Bruyne. I mean...
and that's a lot to go through. But even what Van Gaal was saying, being champions also doesn't allow you to develop youth like that, because when you need to win a game, Charlie, this not be the time to be bringing in youth unless it's critical.
Like, well,
I need experience. Or you score four, where you throw somebody on, then you can't balance the game out. So it's hard. But coming back to the point, why they are failing. We are discussing City in the wrong context. Coming back to the fact that they are failing at the moment, no. It is a blip.
I think it's, to be fair,
it is more than a blip. I pray
it won't be.
To the gods of football that it is more than a blip, and it is the crumbling and complete demise and utter bombardment of this club.
We can't World War II. We can't World War II feeling.
Bro, I want City... Dude, I've been waiting for those 115 charges. I've just been waiting for something to stick. They recently lost that
associated party. transactions.
That bull crap. A job me pass. Make you reduce them my money power small. Bro, these guys have cheated their way to four Premier Leagues back to back. The league has the Premier League CEO refused to go to their game, the last game of the season.
Because he's in training. Look, that's what it is. You can't tell me. You see, what I will not accept is for you to say they've cheated their way. What we can all agree on is that on the basis of the state of play on the pitch, they have been deserved champions for years in a row.
The state of play on the pitch from what is happening behind the scenes. Because what's happening on the pitch is as a result of what they did behind the scenes. And as a Chelsea fan, these people are always making sure that they try to play devil's advocate when it comes to this Man City thing. Because they know that their own two, they are also guilty of the same thing. It's just that they started their own before all of these rules came into play.
They were not guilty of anything.
This financial fair play rules had come back when Abramovich had come, Chelsea wouldn't be the club they are today. So and they always try to side
to contribute to keep your grounds open. They can't tell me.
Unfortunately or unfortunately, that was not when the rules came in. At the end of the day, at the end of the day, what has happened is, the Premier League has leveled one. I think it was classless, by the way, by the FA, by the presidency of the FA, not to go to their trophy presentation at Manchester. I think it was classless. You don't do that.
Enough in leave London.
Can you tell me the story?
Maybe in daughter get Pojimo or something.
Well, make you come up for them.
You know they see.
Make you come up for them.
Yeah. Ah, bro.
It be pure hate. That guy's an Arsenal fan, but that is besides the point. Anyway, to Manchester City's failings, again, I agree with Corey on this. I think it's a blip, and it's probably gotten to them a bit, and they just need to reset. They might reset with Feyenoord in their next game. And if they reset Feyenoord, but the next game in the league is against Liverpool. So it's not really, they don't
and
really
they
have
to
that
get a result. That's the thing I like about that game. They have to get a result. And KDB is back, all of those things. So I expect them to win. Liverpool are winning games they shouldn't be winning. But that's a topic for a different day.
What we call that? The mark of champions, isn't it?
So let me ask. Assuming they lose against Liverpool, does that completely rule them out of the title race for this season?
No, it's Manchester City. I don't think so.
Bro.
I don't think so.
12-point gap. Wait, right now it's what, 8?
Yeah. 8 points. So it would be an 11-point gap.
11 is 4 games. It's 4 games dropping points, right?
Yeah, it's 4 games. It's Liverpool without Salah for 4 matches. Liverpool without Salah for 4 matches.
Bro. I wouldn't rule them out. It's harder. It's a harder challenge.
Yeah.
But Charlie.
I'm not looking down on the work that Arnie Slot has done. Fantastic job by all standards, right? Seems like a very tactically astute manager. You know, but I think at the end of the day, unless we did me and Man City are trailing by 5 points and it's left with 1 match to go, me, I'm never writing them off because those guys are monsters. And if somebody make mistake, one mistake Liverpool go make, then go close them down. Some seasons ago, they were 12 points behind Arsenal or somebody like that. Were they not? At February,
it was 8 points.
Mm-hmm.
I think you with a game in hand, 8 points with a game in hand or something.
Let's leave it.
It was five.
Let's look at. No, it was 8 with a game in hand. By the game in hand, that's it. Then it'd be five. Let's look at it on the other hand. Let's say they don't even win against Liverpool, right? They draw. That's what. How many points? It stays where it is now, which is what 8 points. 8 points is not. We can all agree that it's not outside
eight
of the remit.
Okay, 8 points to City. Okay.
Yeah, it's not outside of the remit of Man City. To close those points down. Okay,
the bottom line you guys are saying is that Man City are not out of the title race, even if they lose to
No,
if they lose or draw,
I think if they lose, it's harder. Like, I don't see where. Well, we never know, right? Liverpool.
Or should we do odds? Because like if they lose to Liverpool,
you think it's a wrap?
Okay, well, on a scale of 1 to 10, what do you think their chances are of winning the title if they fall 11 points behind Liverpool?
Solid 5.
5. That's actually good for an 11 points gap.
I'll say maybe 3.
I think I'll also go with Corey on the 3.
If Liverpool don't get injuries, but don't forget, from now to March, we have no break. So it would be every 3 days.
Every 3 days, every 4 days, you play
even that. This Euro match that, you know, if we play Diaz, then McAllister, then Tins from the start, we all saw what happened. They can't play every 3 days. So we'll see.
And it's so not every team, not every team is good. Not every team is going to gift you some of the goals that Southampton gifted them today.
Like, Southampton dashed them the win today. Like, no doubt about it.
Anyway. So, before we continue, if you haven't done this already, please hit the subscribe button, like, share. The sharing is very important. If you're listening to this episode right now, whatever you're doing, just pause it right now, share this episode. Let people also see what is happening, put them on. And yeah, follow us on our social media pages, Twitter, Instagram, ATW Podcast, GCR, TikTok, After the Whistle. So yeah, moving on. Earlier today, which is Sunday, we saw Man United, give Ruben Amorim an underwhelming start to his, career as a Man United head coach. For all the talk that we're hearing before his first game today, like, there was a lot of excitement from the fans, from the players. There were a lot of good things said by pundits and Amorim himself. Like, there were a lot of people saying good things about him, how he carries himself, the things that he said. There were a lot of comparisons being drawn between him and Erik ten Hag. That, yeah, he's a breath of fresh air, blah, blah, blah. But all of that wasn't really seen on the pitch today. So Man United drew with Ipswich, which is, an underwhelming start to his life as Man United head coach. Van Gelder, first of all, did you watch the match?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
But I can comment.
Yes, you can comment. Like, what do you make? I'm sure, like, you've followed what happened, and what do you make of his, like, start to life, like the fact that he drew with Ipswich Town?
I don't think I wouldn't read much into it, because again, one, this is the Premier League after all. No game is easy. There are no, we may say they are winnable games, but you have to work to win. You can't just assume that you will win because we are Manchester United. Like some people be there, we are Ghana. Then you go chop last. You know, we'll get to that. But that's not how football works. And secondly, look, it's his first game, competitive game as Manchester United manager. His first competitive game as a manager in the Premier League. I'm sure he saw certain things that shocked him. I will be surprised if he doesn't say that, if he wasn't surprised by the quality on display or whatever. It will take some time for the players to understand what he expects of them. It will take some time for them to begin to play the way he wants them to play. So I'm not that much worried. If this was match week 5 and he had 0 wins, 2 draws, or 3 draws, 2 defeats, then maybe I'll say, even though it's still early, I want to see a bit more from Ruben Amorim on the tactical side. But for me, any coach who comes in mid-season, you have to be extremely good, like Thomas Tuchel, to have your ideas hit the ground running immediately. I think every new coach deserves a preseason, right? You deserve a preseason to study your players, to study your environment, to study the club, and all of those things, and do things the way you would want to do it. We can't expect that within 2 weeks, where some of his players have been away, and he's not had some of them as well, that things will just change dramatically, right? So I'm not that surprised. I thought he would actually lose, but a draw is a fair result. I thought he would lose. I don't know why. Like, I just thought, this guy is just going to lose the first game, isn't he? It was just built up for that. That he'll lose the first game, builds more pressure, then he wins two or three, then it calms everybody down, and then they begin to move forward, right? I think in the end, based on the work he's done elsewhere, he looks like a competent enough manager to be up and running. But let's see how that goes. But I'm not that much surprised that he didn't win today. It's unfortunate. It would have been good if he did, but he didn't. So, yeah.
So, for me as a Man United fan, in terms of today's match, I would have preferred to maybe break it down into the good and the bad. Because unfortunately, I didn't see too much good today. So, I'll have to focus on the bad.
You talk the good, no, at least.
Honestly, if you ask me, like, the positives from today, I can't think of many. Like, Onana had a good match, which is a bad thing. Because if your keeper is having a good match, it means something is going wrong. If you compare the XG from today, I think Ipswich had a higher XG than us. Like, they had an XG of 2 point something. United had 1 point something.
Mm-hmm.
So that one alone, it means you are doing something wrong. First of all, as you guys know from our last episode, I was skeptical about him being extremely loyal to the three-back system. And after today, I am even more skeptical than I was. Because even the parts of that system that I thought maybe the players might be able to adapt to and things, like, I'm now even less sure about it. For example, him finding wing-backs within our current team. First of all, him playing Ahmad as a wing-back, for me, is a travesty. Like, it is unacceptable. It shouldn't be happening. For me, I put that on the same level as playing Mazraoui as number 10. It is the same level of abomination. It's just that one just has the benefit of the doubt as a new manager. If Ten Hag was the one who went to play Ahmad as a right wing back, the fans would be up in arms. But right now, because he's a new manager, people are just trying to give him the benefit of the doubt. But it shouldn't happen. Ahmad means if they hope today, like, he not go put in too much effort on the defensive side so that Amorim go talk, say, okay, this guy, he's not really a good fit. I have to play him up further up the pitch. But the guy do the work, he did track back and things like those type of things are anywhere you put me, I'll go do my best. That he shouldn't be doing that. Ahmad is probably our most talented attacker. He shouldn't be playing wing back. It's as simple as that. Another thing, probably like our best or most consistent players right now, I would say you know my feelings about Bruno, but I would have to say Bruno, Mazraoui, Ahmad again, and probably De Ligt. Out of these four consistent performers, three were playing in a position that they were uncomfortable with. Mazraoui was playing right center back, which he was very uncomfortable with, like, at least going forward. Because another thing is that Mazraoui is very good on the ball, so you expect him to see more of the ball in dangerous areas. But playing him a right center back, it didn't happen too much. There were a few times where he was able to show his qualities, but it's not enough when you play him a right center back. Bruno, he seemed quite lost today on the park. Like, he just seemed lost. Bruno, yeah, you know me, my feelings about him again. Like, again, it's hard for me to say good things about him, but he seemed lost on the pitch. Ahmad again, right wing back. So at this, like, three out of four of your very consistent performers were playing in positions where you're not maximizing their best qualities.
Sorry, but so where was Mason Mount?
Mason Mount, Amorim come, he comes sweet in head inside, come talk, say, Mason Mount, he say, I like him so much, he did so well in training, I have two different positions for him to play, so he'll be very happy. He came on the 85th minute today. So your man just come from Fulham where he leave him on until the 85th minute.
I'm so glad I had muted. So when Amorim signed, I muted everything Manchester United on my time. From Amorim to United to his coaches, I muted. I didn't want to say anything.
You have to so mute Elder Amu too, because that's the name Twitter is giving him, Elder Amu.
Thank you. But Smiley, This is just piggybacking off what you were saying. I'm looking at your formation right now, and I do think it's a formation that should have been more fluid than it is currently. Ahmad at right wing back is essentially playing right wing. Because Mazraoui then fills in at right back, you move the shape into a 4-3-3.
You see, on paper, that's what I also thought it would look like. But he was actually operating further back in the, on the pitch. Like, even his assist, his assist from today, he started running from very deep. He came from his own half. And Ahmad, one of his best qualities is him being able to carry the ball into the box and just create a lot of danger and chaos. So when you play my wing back, you are putting him very far away from the action. So you nullify his his attacking threats, and you have him tracking back. Yeah, like a talented player like Ahmad, and his focus today is having to track back and cover Leif Davis and make sure that you stop him, and it shouldn't be happening.
That tactics is called tracking and getting free.
for me, I think a manager coming in during an international break where you don't have your players, if they said the people that were called up, Bruno, an injured in your team, was not available till Thursday or something like that, I do think this first game though, they tried. I think I want to give him, don't get me wrong, I really hope he fails and United continues to suffer and your happiness never continues to diminish. That's what I truly want in my heart for United fans. But from a more unbiased point of view, I do think this first game, you kind of have to dash it, bro. Because after the international break, give him another week and let's see what he can teach the players.
I mean, it's not like I'm writing him off, but these are the red flags that me, when Tena came, there were red flags I saw that I tried to ignore. I tried to ignore those red flags because, he be new, he needs time, blah, blah, blah. I don't want to ignore those red flags because, this team, on paper, it seemed like maybe he might be able to fit these players into a three-back system. I'm less convinced of that now. Maybe when more players come back, there are still players who are supposed to come back. Euro is supposed to come back. Luke Shaw is not fully fit. Menu is not fully fit.
Where's Martinez?
Martinez wasn't part of the squad today. Nobody has really given us an explanation for that.
Did he get a red card or something?
No, he just wasn't part of the squad. And so, honestly, I've not seen any explanation for why.
Let's just say, as in boy left the dagger, as well as I know the game.
Teacher spent socially. Teacher, there's some teachers. But honestly, it's not like me, I just want to be critical. Because me, I liked Amorim when he was at Sporting. I liked him long ago. It's just that, it's not like I just want to criticize him for the sake of it. But, even him being extremely loyal to the three-back system, again, I said that on the last episode. For me, as a good manager, yes, to some extent, you have to stick to your principles. But formation is not the only principle. You can change your formation and still stick to your principles. Pep, we've seen him play three-back before. It's just that on paper, it will look like a three-back. But when you come on the pitch, it's actually a three-back. You've seen other managers do things outside of their comfort zone. But when you read about Amorim, since the days of Braga, them say he never even played four-back in even one match before.
That's true.
And that one for me, it doesn't make me too comfortable, honestly. But it's just the first game. There's still more players to come. Ugarte, he didn't start today because he came back late from the international break. Again, Euro,
I know. Euro maybe, but Ugahu.
Ugarte has actually been,
boy.
He's
number one boy.
He actually started picking up in the past five games. The starts there, he was playing proper mechanics.
Those five games included Chelsea match. You do know that.
when Van Nistelrooy took over as interim, like the four games that he took over, I think he started all those four games and he played very well in those games. So, like,
again, one of those games is Chelsea's match. You know that.
Would you have liked Van Nistelrooy to continue? Out of curiosity.
That one, it would produce a very reactionary answer, because honestly, like I said again, Van Nistelrooy, he managed to steady the ship very well, and he was putting players in the right position. Sometimes you just need someone to do the simple things. You don't want someone who overthinks, who tries to put square pegs in round holes. Van Nistelrooy was just doing it's like he took the team back to basics. He put Casemiro and Ugarte as a double pivot. He was playing Ahmad in his position. Like, he was just doing all the right things. So, like, if you ask me right now after this match what we've seen today, I'll not produce an entirely honest answer, because it's like right now I'm just thinking, okay, me too, I want a manager who will just do those simple things. I don't want somebody who is coming to force the players to play this system that I'm not entirely comfortable with.
I
have a follow-up question.
Wait, so Corey, let me just add this. Maybe it might be your even. Are you willing to allow time for Ruben?
They don't have a choice.
No, because you know some people, they check out. They go, this manager, I don't like him, and that's it. I don't think Smiley's like that, but I'm just asking that. Are you willing to just go along with it?
I'm the most patient Man United fan you ever find, though. Like, me, with every Man United manager, with the exception of maybe Rangnick or something, Rangnick be the one with me, I write him off after like three matches, because Rangnick, his first 10 games, he came into a run of very easy games and he was struggling in them. And that's when I knew that this guy is not bringing anything. And the complaining and the shifting of blame and all those things just made me see that this guy is not bringing anything. But with the exception of that, like everybody else, Mourinho, I was loyal to him till like the last few months. Van Gaal, I was loyal to him till the last few months. Like Van Gaal, before they sacked him, I was even saying that, like, if they sack him, fine. If they don't sack him, fine. But it wasn't like I was demanding for him to be sacked. It was a similar thing with Ole, similar thing with Ten Hag. It wasn't like I'd gotten to that point where he has to be fired at all costs. Like the way Kawawa, if he decides to say, this manager, therefore sack him, either that. Like, it usually just gets to a point where, okay, if they sack him, fine. If they don't sack him too, I could go out along with them. So I'm far from that point with Amorim that, like, I think that, yeah, nothing good could come from him. I think he got to where he is for a reason. And, like, on the charismatic side, he's showing good signs. So if he can make the three-back system work, I'm all for it. It's just that I have my doubts about that.
I think he has enough of a... quote unquote winnable easy run to build it.
Smiley, I want to do this. I want to ask you this question before we move on to his run, though. Them sacking Van Nistelrooy or them letting him go, do you think that was a good thing or a bad thing with regards to him staying on, in terms of from a cultural perspective? The Manchester United culture. Right now, United have no identity. And them trying to reconnect with their old selves and like, there's still a disconnect with the fans. And so I don't know how easy it will be to rebuild. I don't know whether he'll be able to build that from scratch.
I mean, Van Nistelrooy had to go. Now, and like, I perfectly understand why he lets him. Because you can't have an assistant manager. You can have an assistant manager who, in one of his first press conferences as interim, he says that it's his dream to like be the full-time manager. Meaning that the guy just there or back, he waits to make you slip up and then
take over.
He said like that's his dream job, to be the full-time manager. So like nobody would like to have an assistant who you know is openly gunning for your job. It means like even if the team lose, low-key, I get more, because that's one step closer to him coming back again as interim again. Like if that happens.
Sorry to cut you, but also on the other hand, having him on board means every time things are not going well, the cameras are panning to him, and you don't want, as a new manager, you want to have that level of control. You want to say, hey, you do this and that person is doing it. You do that and that person. And you want to work with people that know you, understand you, know how you do your things. So even if you are angry at the players and you are screaming at them, the assistant that can go and comfort the players, so don't mind him. He just ate bad jollof today. So you, it'd be cool, calm down. You don't want somebody that, as Smiley said, is gunning for your job, who is probably just going to pretend like he'd be cool with you, but every day he'd release, he'd leak information, give the higher up, say, Akwadu Abomu, Akwadu Abomu.
This guy, me, I tell him, say, make you no play a mad right wing back. He go,
So Smiley, on that point, on the selection point, right, he made some picks that were quite interesting for me. I'm wondering why Mainu is not featuring.
I mean, he just came back from a long injury, so okay. That one is understandable.
I'm also wondering why Hoyland and Jay-Z.
Don't mention that name. That guy's not good. Jay-Z, he's not good.
Bro,
Zexy.
You see, again, me, usually I'm very patient with players. Usually I'm very patient with players, but Zexy, from day one, I said, this guy, he's not good. Like, his positioning doesn't suggest to me that this is somebody who's going to be a prolific scorer at any point. He might probably end up as like those Joelinton and teams who like they start out as strikers way later, then just bring them further back because he's just no. Today he plays on ball where I say this guy, centre back being calling because there's no striker who should. That striker
over the bar.
See, Corey, there's no striker in this world. There's no good striker in this world.
That would strike a ball like that. I thought that as well.
That's pure center back, like ball striking technique.
No.
Like I was already unconvinced about that guy, but that particular strike it made us.
You need to look for this highlight.
If you see it, you know it's copyrighted. Like I will put on for this episode is that make people understand it. This isn't the ball striking technique of a striker. Like it's just not.
What was he trying to do? Bend it into the top left or what?
Exactly. The one you play make it go through.
He play go goalkeeper, but you know be
Rosie.
No. Zexy, they like.
I see. I'm the first game now as a. We can't
give the pop, you know, it's gonna go. My brother forgets.
You know, say if somebody shine, you if tell from the beginning or as I told you already, Zexy be there if he did Ghana, like he be there kid way, he did go play ball for Sakura Park, but he get everything, he get the boots, he get a shin pad, he get a hose, he get a jersey, new one, everything. Then they overcompensate. So say in shyness, no will come out. If he get a ball,
we
select him just because if we don't select him, we know we get the ball play. That guy is shown.
And that would have been because you're a 6'5" striker. You shouldn't be playing this kind of DB ball way they should be. Like, it pain my heart. But yeah,
again, Arsenal fans fought. Like, why didn't we sign Zex? We need a striker, this thing. Oh, bro. After the first few games I've seen him, I'm just like, woo!
You really dodged serious bullets. But yeah, again, I'm hopeful. Because, again, like...
Anthony 2.0?
Of Zexy. Him, I don't even think he'll last that long, like, if he continues like this, to become, like, to get to Anthony's level. Like, because in the person who brought you to, he'll go. So, and...
How many seasons has Anthony had?
I think this is his third season.
Oh, how?
This is his third season. He came in Ten Hag's first season. And this was Ten Hag's third season. So, yeah. Zexy, like, honestly, because already today... In the post-match, Amorim has already passed some comments about him that suggests that like he's not too happy with him because he made a comment about how Zexy should be getting into the box more to be on the receiving end. He not be convinced by those 9.5 Roman striker kind of thing. Like you won't be, you be 6'5", be in the box and receive the ball. Like nobody wants to see a 6'5" striker in the middle of the park trying to string play together and things. Like boss, go ahead the ball. We want the basics from you. So Amorim passed some comments that like he wants Zexy to be in the box more often, make more runs into the box. So yeah, like if he continues like this, I don't think he's going to last. Like probably one season and we sell him. So yeah, besides that, like Amorim, in the end, like I'm still hopeful. I still think that something good might happen. And in the end, even though, like, even if he wants to be stubborn and stick to what he knows, we, to some extent, we also want that. Because one of the problems we had with Ten Hag is that he came to United and he was playing completely different from what he was doing at Ajax. And his excuse was that the players are different. But if we bring you to the club and you're not doing what you showed us for us to bring you, then, like, what's the point? So at least if you're going to fail like by doing your own thing. Don't fail by doing something completely different, because that one, it will come with more regrets, because now you'll be wishing that you tried what you are known for. And then at least if you feel that way, then that one, people will understand that, okay, you did what you know, you failed. But then right now, it's like, okay, we never actually saw what you did at Ajax, but exactly. So yeah.
Actually, that's really... I just remembered something. When Arteta first started, I swear he started with 3-4 back.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's a stability thing.
It's the most competent way to shore up your defense.
Because yeah, I think it's a stability thing.
You can have 3 center backs that quickly move to 5 if your wing backs pull back.
Yeah.
When Tuchel came to Chelsea, prior to Chelsea, he wasn't playing a 3 at the back. He was playing 4 at the back, you know. His first game against Wolves, 3 at the back. And Chelsea fans were clamoring for it under Lampard because we were too open. And at some point, everybody was like, okay, now the team is stable. You win Champions League. This is a move to 4 at the back. And he said, look, with the kind of players I've got, I can't play 4 at the back here. We'll be too loose. And every time he tried it, we were horrible.
He tastes success with the haram ball ways. He said, no, it'd be too sweet.
I'm not going back. I'm not going back.
This
is sweet. No. In the 3-5-2 way, this guy take win the FA Cup. Arteta take win the FA Cup.
Yeah. 3-5-2, Conte take win the league. 3-5-2, he take win the FA Cup in the next season. Look, at the end of the day, I just think that Amorim's 3-5 or 3 at the back system is even more attacking than most.
Because he likes to use a winger as one of the wing back positions. Okay. Just he chose the wrong winger to use over there.
I have a question. What does that say for people like Diogo Dalot?
I mean, Dalot for me would make a good wing back, especially if you are playing him at right wing back. So he played at left wing back. Or Dalot, he's been one of the players who has been played out of position the most. Like, okay, not out of position, because he's decent at left back. And you don't have
cover, basically.
Yeah. So, like, I think he would also fit in as right wing back if they give, because in the end, his weakness is probably defending. Like, he can sometimes lose focus in defending. So, but he has the pace, he has the energy and stamina to be bombing forward and all of those things. So, him and right wing back wouldn't be a problem. If anything, my concern is Mazraoui, because Mazraoui, he's more brain than athleticism. So in a wing back, you want somebody who is bombing forward, coming back, and that sort of thing. I don't think Mazraoui is really that type of person. Mazraoui is more of an intelligent person, like just in tight spaces, he will either do some simple skill, just take beat a man or pass
him out of person. Do you know who Mazraoui reminds me of?
Uh-huh.
You see, if you go play ball plus boys for Park Cup, there'll be some one player In not really, they look athletical. But if you get bored, then they shall go bored. Then, he does some turning. He does some turning. He gives some last pass. They say, in the tight. Then, in the run of the ball, if he then can, people in the
kind of.
If he pass on the chat, idea.
Mazraoui is probably a person who maybe has more to. I wouldn't say, because I think Mazraoui is one of those players who managers like, because he'll give you consistent 7/10 performances. You know, give you 10/10, but you know, give you 5/10. Consistent 7/10, 7/10. So every time you play him, you know what you're getting. So he'll probably this right. Yeah, so maybe the right center back that they played him today, maybe it might be something that comes to stay for him. And then,
I have to say, though, I see what Shaw, the Malasia do. Then chalk son and say, oh, I hate. Oh, and Charlie is still being nigger. Then change the manager. No, keep fit.
Then this is this that have nothing to come from Amo, so make I not waste my energy for it. Maybe we just wait them out and see what go happen next.
What happened but to yeah. Malasa? What be the injury?
Please, too, today nobody knows.
Whether, I watched the video this week. They said he had a knee injury. They did an operation on him. It wasn't supposed to last so long. And then during the recovery, he relapsed. That required another surgery. That even required longer recovery. And
I just said then do some patchwork with it and hope say that it will hold up.
I mean, they take and go last. They said they go take and go, but you know, make them go pump plus elephant.
Horse elephant placenta.
Juice. Horse placenta. He go, Alas, I'll go in there for.
You know, United, we know, like, we'll be very chill. So, you know, Ronaldo can't talk to United, we'll still be old fashioned. And they can go Rabito Clinic.
The Abonji clinic, they know they treat you, then they take medicine, they go train you for an hour. Musaribu.
But yeah, anyway, we've come to the end of this episode. Again, if you haven't done this already, please follow us on our social media pages. On Twitter and Instagram, it's ATW Podcast GCR. On TikTok, it's After the Whistle. Subscribe to our YouTube, After the Whistle Podcast. Remember also to give us a 5-star rating on any of the podcast platforms and share the episode. Like, if you finish listening to the episode, just share, comment, like, your thoughts, what you think we should talk about. One, if you there's something you want us to talk about, you can share. If there's anybody you want to have on the podcast as a guest, you can suggest. And then we'll see whether we can reach out to the person, whether footballer, journalist, anybody. Like, we're open to suggestions. So yeah, once again, Charlie guys, thank you. Hopefully, our next episode will have a full house because it's been a long time since we had a full house for any of our episodes. Yeah. But yeah, Charlie, once again, thank you. And as always, ATW dominates the conversation.
This has been a Gold Coast Reports production. Catch up on episodes and discover more shows from our network on listen2gcr.com.